So I was bothered by a question for a long time, and that was the beginning of Vayigash. Yehuda tells a story, and if you read the story carefully, there's only one question that there's a question that pops up pretty like quickly, and that is that the story doesn't actually seem to be correct. There's a lot of details in there which we'll see in just a moment that seem not to have ever happened. And the question is, what are we supposed to make of that? There's obviously, you know, one possibility, which is probably not the way we've been learning for all these years. And that is that the Torah is obviously, you know, just not giving every detail, but it all happened there. And that's a possibility, but it doesn't necessarily have to be the only possibility. So I had listed that as a potential Chabura topic for years and never got to it. So this week, and I appreciated the Mazel Tov from Shmuel, so thank you. This week, I definitely brought my A game to preparing. I don't know if my A game will be in delivery, but certainly in preparation. I started early, but I could not find any Mefarshim at all. Shouldn't say at all, because I found two. The Chizkuni has like an off comment, and Rav Saratskin also. But nobody had like a big approach to how to deal with all of this. So when stuck, you just Google. And the problem with Googling is if you don't get the words right, it could take you a few chances. This one, it took me two or three goes until I got something. But I found a beautiful article by Rabbi Michael Sussman on Midrashet Harova's website. Interestingly, I did find a beautiful Dvar Torah by Rav Bagno, the Rav of our shul. Not at all related to this topic, but somehow Google picked it up as a great one. I was like, wait a second, is that my shul that Google has as like one of the top picks? So I was like, I guess we'll have to hold on to that for the future. But I found this great article, and the amazing thing is sometimes I don't know who Rabbi Sussman is. I do know that what Midrashet Arova is. So I'm like, that's a reputable school. But he quoted Nechama Leibowitz from two separate articles. So I'm like, okay, great. I have that on my shelf even. So with a little bit of work reading his article and then reading Nechama Leibowitz's article, it worked out really well. I found a good answer to all the questions. Weird part to the whole story is the next day I woke up early in the morning and in my inbox was an email from Nechama Leibowitz. So I told that story to someone, and they're like, wow, that's amazing. I'm like, the more amazing part is that Nechama Leibowitz died many, 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 many years ago. I was like, that's the crazier part. But we have a camp parent whose name is Nechama Leibowitz. And I guess it wasn't like her parents had a good sense of humor, because Leibowitz is her married name. So funny how things work out.
She had a good sense of humor.
Yeah, so sometimes there's a good story to like how the Chabura came about, and sometimes it's just, I don't know, Shabbos morning, I was like leafing through whatever the sefer I brought to shul was, and I found the Chabura. So this one had a better backstory. So with that, let's take a look. Vaygashi lav Yehuda vayomer biaduni yedaber nabdocha davar bezne aduni vayichara pcha beavdecha ki chamocha kefaro. So Yehuda approaches, and he says, "My master, please, let me, you know, speak in the ears of Paro." And he says, you know, he says, like, pardon me. What's the phrase that people do when they don't want to be rude?
With respect.
Yeah, with all due respect, right? But whenever you say with all due respect, it's like an indication that you have absolutely no intention, right? It's like when I started working as a youth director, some parent came. It was the first time I had ever dealt with a crazy parent. They came into they caught me outside of shul. I didn't even have an office, and they're like, "Pardon my French." Now, I didn't know what that meant when I was like 19, 20 years old. And he flew off his handle. And like, there would have been a lot of censoring of what he said. And I was like, oh, that's what you say if you want to curse, and then it's not such a big deal. But yeah, right. So that's what Yehuda's saying. I don't mean to be rude. No, you actually do mean to be rude. And I hope not to anger you, because you were like Paro. One of the kids I learned with from Lev HaTorah asked a good question. He said, like, he's Morid B'Malchus when he says, Ki Chamocha Ke Paro. That's like pretty high up there. So he said, like, what do you do with that? I'm like, I don't know. I guess probably my best answer, I should have said it on the spot, was, I don't know, Google it and see if anybody from, you know, reputable talks about it. Adoni sha'al et avadav le'mor hayesh lachem av... Sorry, yes, Shmuel?
I'm not sure exactly, like, literally what the phrase means. Chamacha kifaro. It's not like kiyatwa kifaro. It's like, those who are like you are like paro?
I guess. I don't know. Like, 2 weeks ago, we had, like, a question about the word et kept coming up. And I thought it was, like, you know, uncommon language. And then I found, like, four or five others just in Vayeshev and Miketz. So then I was like, maybe I just don't understand the grammar of it, you know, so much. I'm not sure, ki chamocha kefaro, if that's like a strange way of reading it, or if it's just like that, you know, you are like paro. But I understand what you're saying, that the chamocha seems to be like a little bit extra, right?
Ki ata kefaro, who is like you.
Right, so ki ata kefaro could have also done it. I'm not sure.
Anyway, sorry.
It's like, with all due respect, I mean, it's not really.
Yeah, but it's just literally, I just don't know how it, like translates. Okay.
Yeah, no, that's a good question. I'm not sure.
We don't know how they spoke back then.
Well,
no,
what,
obviously, but yeah,
so.
I mean, but it's. Yeah.
Right. One thing is for sure. If Yehuda spoke Hebrew, which is not like a slam dunk that he didn't know Egyptian and spoke Egyptian, I know that that's going to watch out. Actually, no, that would be, it's a pasuk, yeah, Melitz Beno Tam. Yeah, I don't know, he probably spoke Hebrew, and then they translated, yeah. So, but did they use these exact words, or did God, you know, choose these words for perpetuity? It depends who you ask, that's probably it. There are definitely some people that will tell you that this is exactly the words that were used. Yud Tet, Adoni Shal Tavadav Le'mor Yesh Lechem Avoach. So my master asked, meaning...
He couldn't have been speaking Hebrew. Because at this point, he didn't know it was Yosef. So there's no way he was speaking Hebrew.
No, but the Pasuk in Miketz says that they didn't understand that Yosef understood them, ki ha-melitz benotam, that there was a translator in between them. Which, by the way, if you want a really cool question, there are two words that come up in Miketz last week that are only once in Tanakh, professions, and Melitz is one of them. There is no other translator in all of Tanakh. That was a trivia question last week at our Shabbos table. Totally stumped. Did not see that one. But okay. So our my master, Yosef, right, you asked us, your servants, saying, Hayesh lachem avoach, do you have a father or a brother? Now, the problem is, if you look through the stories, you'll see that that doesn't appear at all. There's no question of that. Now, probably what's going to happen is, I put the psukim for Perek Membet, which is Yosef and the brothers in their first interaction, and Yaakov and the brothers when they return. We probably won't look at those psukim because, judging on time, we're probably not going to have time to look at those psukim. So they're really there more for reference, for anybody that wants to check during the shir to see if there's something in there that, you know, you think that either I'm wrong or I missed more of the dissimilarities in the story.
Is someone else giving a share in your house at 5 o'clock in the morning?
The noise is definitely not coming from my house. Everybody
okay,
is...
Okay, so could whoever has noise, could you please mute your phone if you have other conversations things?
All right, pasuk chaf. Vayomer l'Adoni, yesh lanu av zaken, v'yelid zikunim katan, v'achiv meit, v'yivater hu levado limo, v'aviv ayvo. So, vayomer l'Adoni, I said, you know, we said to you that, or to my master, so he's speaking reverentially, we have an old father and we have a young brother, Vachiv Meit, and our brother died. He remained himself, Li'imo, from his mother, V'aviv Aivo, and his father loves him. Now, that actually, we have almost the same thing, V'huni Sha'ar Levado. He remained to himself. It doesn't say Vayivaterhu Levado. Now, I share that with you for two reasons. First off, that means that there is a difference, but it's similar. I mean, it's not completely made up. But my very, very, very first exploration in Tanakh, I don't know how old I was. It was definitely post-Israel. or during Israel. So I wasn't like, you know, a 7-year-old prodigy wondering these questions. But in all of Tanakh, Vayivater and Levad only comes 4 times in all of Tanakh. It's twice here, which one of them might be the Nishar. Maybe I'm remembering wrong. And it comes by Eliyahu. I think it's the Balaturim that points out that there also there is Vayigash. Even if we don't have the word Vayigash by Eliyahu, there's the concept of Milchama. He's fighting with God when he turns to God and says, Vayivater ani levadi, I am the only one left. So there is this, Vayivater is this like absolute loneliness. Actually, the fourth one is Vayivater hu levado, right, by Yaakov when he's fighting the angel. So you said to us, bring him down and I will look at him. But no mer aladoni, lo yuchal nar lazobat aviv, vazabat aviv, vamate. And we said to you that the boy cannot leave his father, and if he does, he's going to die. That also, it's nowhere in there. They don't want him to go, but they never make that argument. So you said to us, if he does not come down, don't waste your time seeing my face. Okay, so that's, by the way, that's the end of their interaction that's the end of recalling the interaction with Yosef. So there's at least two gaping, there's two really, really big lines in there that they never said at all. He never asked them about a father or brother. What did he say to them? Right? He accuses them of
being spies.
Right, he says, you're spies. It's a very, if you take a look below, Yosef, you know, sees them. And then he says to them, why are you here? And they say, well, before anything. He says, you're spies. Didn't say anything. Didn't do anything. And then what do they answer? They say, it's not true. We just came to buy food. We're all the sons of one man. And then he says, no, it's not true. You're spies. So then they say, well, we're 12 sons. We're 12 brothers. From one man, and the younger one was with our father, and the other one is not here. So that part, you know, they leave out, and then there's that whole swearing thing. He puts Shimon in jail, and then at the end, he says to them, you know what, I'll send all of you back except for one, and then you'll bring back your brother, and then I'll know that you're telling the truth. And then it says Vayasu Kain. So there's no, they never argue that anything is going to happen to Binyamin. So the question is, why is he lying and making that stuff up? Okay, any questions so far? Okay, so now let's take a look at the second part. Vayikalinu alav dechavi. Now, oh, by the way, the first part, anything that Yosef, that Yehuda makes up or changes or lies about in the first part is obviously more dangerous because Yosef was at that conversation. So Yosef could very easily be like, hey, by the way, none of that ever happened, right? Like, nice speech, you get high marks for the quality of your speech and the content of your speech and the delivery of your speech, but guess what? You lied. Right, so that's, he won't get anywhere. Now the second part of the speech is much easier. He can make up anything he wants here because Yosef wasn't there. This happened in the privacy of his home. So we told our father what happened. So our father said, go buy us me'at ochel. It's interesting, I saw this last week. Why does he say shuvu shivru lanu ma'at ochel? He knows that he won't sell him food. This happened already. Right when they got back, he's like, "What? You know, what's the deal?" And he says, "Well, I can't buy any food as long as you don't bring back down Binyamin." So now he says, "Shuvu shivru lanamat ochel." So I don't remember which of the mefarshim suggests this, because he's specifically asking for ma'at ochel. He turns to the brothers and says, I understand. Yeah, Yosef won't sell you a lot of food if you are until you bring Binyamin down. But maybe if you don't bring Binyamin down, you could buy a little bit of food. So shuvu shivir lanu mat ochel. Vano mer lo nuchal aredet. So he said, we can't go. Im yesh achinor katon nitanu v'yaradnu, ki lo nuchal aropne ha'ish, v'achinor katon nitanu v'yaradnu. We can't show up without Binyamin with us. Vayomer avdecha v'yelenu. So Yehuda then says that our father said the following. Atem yedatem kishnayim yaldal yishti. You know that my wife gave birth to two sons. And he left me, and I said, or it was said, that he was ripped up by an animal, and I haven't seen him since. And if something happens to him and I lose this one also, then I will go down to my grave terribly. And now, if your master appears by my father, and the boy is not with me, and his soul is bound, and their souls are bound to each other, that should be bolded also. He doesn't say that, right? That's not there either. And when he sees that the boy is gone, vamate, he will die, and I will go there. My father will dent his grave terribly. So, obviously, the biggest part is Yaakov never said that. Now, that's pretty powerful for him to say, right? My father said that kishnayim yaldal yishti. Right? We've pointed that out in the past. To say kishnayim yaldal yishti is saying that my father had two kids and one wife. It's not true. He had 12 boys and 4 wives. So for Yehuda to make that declaration, certainly on Yehuda's part, is an acknowledgement that what? I'm just not that important. Right? That's really where I'm at. We acknowledge that our father really only cares about Rachel and only really cared about Yosef and Binyamin, and Binyamin's the only one left. But still, that never happened. And the Ach Tarof Torav Loriti Vadhena, also not the same thing. So why would he add that in if it didn't happen? You have a harder time with the first details, but this one, why would he add it in?
Well, I kind of go with the, I was still reading when you went, I skipped to the next part. But I understand that when he's relating back the story, he's again relating it through the interpreter, which we believe is Menashe. That if Yosef said, oh, that's not what you said before, then he'll know that he understood him from the day one. Right now, I suppose Yosef didn't understand Hebrew, as far as they know.
Right.
Well, no, because if he translates and Yosef's like, you didn't say anything about it, then they're not word for word.
He may not translate, he may not translate word for word. Translations are not always easy, right. Perfect translation from one language to another.
So Yosef will say, I wouldn't say anything about, it's not like,
in the first conversation, they do speak about the youngest one is still with my father.
Right.
So the father does exist. If he exaggerates a little bit, it went through a translator. The words may not come out exactly the same.
Okay, so that is an interesting possibility, is that what the Torah changes the words around a little bit to say that perhaps stuff got lost in translation. Possible. Anybody else? Any other thoughts? So specifically, the question is, why does Yehuda, though, there's two questions. Why does Yehuda change the story in general? But why does Yehuda change the story with the father? So I think with the father, I mean, this is more gripping.
Right? Well, he's looking for sympathy. He's looking for sympathy.
Yeah. I mean,
playing it up.
Right. If you look at the story, actually, of what happens, it's not so sympathetic. Yaakov is upset. He's like, why did you have to tell him any of this stuff? And then they're like, it wasn't our fault, blah, 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 which is not a shocking comment from the brothers. And then Yehuda basically says, which I do love those psukim, Anochi arvenu miyadi tivakshenu, I guarantee Binyamin, right? I'm giving my word that I'll bring him back. And let's just do it. But basically, that's it. Let's just do it. Let's go, and I'll bring him back. And then what does Yaakov say? Okay, go team. Let's do this. This is what we should do. Let's get some food. Let's get some bribes. Let's get some stuff going. And hopefully he'll come back. And until he comes back, I'm going to be in a state of limbo. This is much more gripping. My father said I only have one kid left. And his brother was torn apart. And if anything happens, he'll be bereft for the rest of his life. Okay, so high marks on Yehuda's part. Great speech. So let's take a look at the Chizkuni. The Chizkuni says, Adoni Sha'al, lo matzinu sheshal zeh. Ela yesh lanu lomar sheshal lehem ki eich yimlenu libo lo tzishkarim ala befanav. So Chizkuni says he couldn't, this stuff had to happen, at least in the first part of the speech. Pasu yutet and chaf bet. Because how could he lie to him? So the brothers go home and they say to Yaakov, the reason why we asked him this was, he asked us where we were born and all these intimate questions about us. And we were forthcoming and we told him everything. So I think what the Chizkuni is suggesting is that there are three stories and each story has a little bit extra to add to the other. And if you take the totality of the three stories together, you get the conversation that actually happened. Why? Because the Torah is specifically not a history book. When the Torah actually tells you every single detail and doesn't miss anything, and then has minor adjustments, like last week in the dreams of Paro, so then that's important. That means that the Torah is actually specifically changing something for a reason. But here, when there's so much left out and the three stories differ enough, then what the Chizkuni is suggesting is that all the details together, if you put them together, you'll get the actual conversation that happened. Okay? The Rav Sirotskin. Lo matzinu sheshal tom al zeh. So it's the same thing. This, we don't see that. V'ulai ki tzer shama katu v'met sha'al otam k'dei ladat mashlom avivu v'nyamin. Maybe... Actually, he did ask all of this. He wanted to know all these details. Aval lo tekef. Yosef was smart. He didn't ask all the questions right away. Meaning if the first thing he said was, you know, how old is your father? Is your father still alive? You know, how is your dad? It would have tipped him off then. Maybe this isn't Paro. This isn't an Egyptian. This is really our brother. Ki ayach hoshei shemitoch kach yakiruto. Rakim tina chei tchilu adlabatram usaper lo dot mutzam v'amru. He waited until they actually asked the questions, until they gave the information, and then it became a logical question. I play a game with my kids sometimes. It's a great game to play with younger children, and truth is with older children also, because and adults, because we're often not so good at this. But I play a game where I force them in a conversation, you know, we start a topic, whatever they want, but you have to ask five questions on the same exact topic. Meaning like, hi, what's your name? Oh, that's your name. Okay, you have to ask a follow-up question to that. It can't be like, you know, okay, you like the Mets? Okay, great. What did you eat for dinner last night? Like, it's a good way to practice how natural conversation should be, which is an art that I think is lost on a lot of people nowadays. So it's same thing here. Yosef, Rav Sirotskin is saying, what happened? He saw the conversation and just led it to the point where he was like, oh, and how's your dad? That, so according to Rav Sirotskin, also this whole thing happened. Okay, so the stories are not exactly the same. Now the Abarvanel points out that what is really glaringly missing from this whole conversation is Yehuda never brings up anything about being accused of being spies, and Abarvanel says, you know why that is?
Why would he?
Yeah, because he doesn't want to touch that conversation. He's like, if Yehuda got past that, if Yosef got past that. And his only issue now is not that we're spies, but that we're thieves. Let's deal with just being thieves, not being thieves and spies. I guess like being a thief is bad. Being a spy is like high treason. Definitely don't want to go there. All right, let's take a look at the middle of page two, the Medrash Tanchuma, because really, if we ask the question, could some of these things that are in the story not have happened? In the actual text itself, the Medrash paints something far worse. Adoni shalat avadav. Amar lo b'tchila bat aleinu. He goes, listen, let's be honest. You came at us accusingly from the very beginning. How many people from how many regions, from how many nations, how many countries came down to Mitzrayim to buy food? You didn't ask any of them anything. We're not interested in getting married to you or anybody in your family. Right? Rashi quotes like a snippet of this. He says, like, we weren't looking for shidduchim, that you had all these questions to ask us. You know, how old is your father? Is your father okay? Any more brothers out there? And yet we were open and honest with you. So Yosef, Yehuda, lama ta dabran mikol achecha. So Yosef says to Yehuda, why are you the most outspoken of the brothers? I noticed in my goblet, right? Remember, he had been using his goblet to show them that he knew more than meets the eye. So he says, I see in my goblet that there are older brothers than you. The reason for all this is that I laid my life on the my life and my soul on the line. And that's why I'm the spokesman. So says, why didn't you do this to your brother when you sold him for 20 pieces of silver? Clearly, by the way, this Medrash Tanchuma does not subscribe to the Rashbam's philosophy of the sale of Yosef. Right, Yosef would have had to hear the going on between him and the Yishmaelim. It's the art of the Vicha Zakein, and you gave your father a hard time. You caused him such grief. Amartalo tarof taraf Yosef, bulo chatalach, and Yosef didn't do anything wrong. Aval zesh chatav ganav hagavia and mor lavicha halacha chevel acharadli. But this one, Binyamin, he actually is guilty. He's a thief. Why didn't you just say to your father that the rope follows the rope follows the bucket, right? Basically, that's the expression, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. That just was the way that they said that 2,000 years ago. What's he saying? He's saying, your Binyamin is a thief and the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. Who else is a thief?
Like his mother.
Like his mother. Although actually, I mean, that's what how the Medrash explains it. But the truth is, you can actually, you can't hear me? Or you can't answer?
No, I hear you. I have people in the house talking.
Oh, yeah. So yeah, it's true that it's his mother, but guess what? It's also his father. Right? Isn't that amazing? Binyamin comes from Binyamin comes from a long line of thieves on both sides. So that, yeah, so I don't know, one of the Leva Torah boys was like, that's going to be my new expression. Every time someone like is, you know, you want to say the apple doesn't fall far from the tree, he's going to be like, I'm going to say, and I'm like, I probably said things like that, Shana Aleph also. But yeah, okay, so that's what he's saying. So Kevin Shesham Yehuda Kach, Tz'aku Bacha V'kol Gadol Mar Nefesh, he screams out, Amar Ki'echa Le'alviv, Anari Nenu Tanu, how am I going to go to my father? How can I face my father? So Amar Yosef, bo nitvakeinu nikvakeach shneinu. Emor milachu ustor dinecha. Let's debate this out between you and me. So miyad Amar Yehuda Naftali. Yehuda loses it. He turns to Naftali. What's Naftali's midrashic gift?
Speed.
Yeah, he's fast. So what happens? He turns to Naftali and said, lechu rei kama shvakim yesh b'mitzayim. Go and see how many marketplaces there are in Mitzrayim. He jumps and he runs, comes back. He goes, there's 12 of them. Interesting. Right, it doesn't work out so well that there are 12. Right? The Medrash could have made it neater by saying 10, but maybe the point is, he says there's 12, but there's only 10 of us. What are we going to do? So he says, no worries. Yehuda says, I'll destroy three. And don't leave anybody around. So the brothers say to him, but Mitzrayim is not like Shechem. Not, I don't think he means in terms of size, but if you destroy Mitzrayim, you're going to destroy the entire world. At that point, Yosef had nothing else to say. Yosef actually put himself in harm's way. Because if he had, if his brothers had killed him, nobody would have known. Why did he get rid of everybody from his court? He left it. It was just him and the brothers. He didn't want to embarrass his brothers in front of the Egyptians when he reveals himself. So Amar lo Yehuda lo Yosef, Teidashem etchila lo bata aleinu ela balilot. Betchila amarta lanu meraglim etem. You accuse us of being spies. Shni amarta lo rotet aretz ervat aretz batem. And then you told us that we came to see the inner secrets of the land. Shlishit gavi ginavtem. And then you accuse us of stealing your cup. Ani nishpach b'chayei aviv ha-tzadik, v'ata nishpach b'chayei paro rasha. I swear by my holy father, and you swear by the wicked king. If I take my sword out of its sheath, I will fill Egypt with dead people. If you take your sword out of your sheath, I will tie it around your neck. If you open up your mouth, I will swallow it, or I'll shove it down your throat. I don't know, something like that. If you open up your mouth, I'm going to stick it, a rock down it. So he says, what am I supposed to say to my father? So tell your father it's not your fault. Right, your brother followed his mother, and that's why he's in jail. So Amar lo Yehuda din sheker atadano tanu. He said, what you did is not honest. It's not justice. So Amar lo Yosef ein lecha din sheker kemechira tachichem. So what does Yosef answer back? What do you mean? You're talking about dishonesty. There's nothing more dishonest than what you did when you sold your brothers. Your brother Yosef. So Amar lo Yehuda nur de shchem dalik bilibi. He says that the fire of Shechem is burning in my heart. So Amar lo Yosef nur de tamar kalatach anamatfe. He says I think it's actually the fire of Tamar that's burning in there. So Amar lo Yehuda ratach anavlet de meheman li. He says, I'm going to get angry and no, you won't believe me. Amar lo Yosef, ritcha didach ana mitabera. He goes, I'm going to break your anger. So Amar lo Yehuda, achshav ani eitzev etzba kol shvakim mishav etzayim badam. He goes, I'm going to paint all of the marketplaces of Egypt in blood. So Amar lo Yosef, tzabai meitim imeichem. He goes, I'm not surprised, Yosef says, that you would suggest that. Shetzvatem ktonet achichem badam, amartem lavichem tarov torav. You guys are painters. That's what you do. When the going gets tough, you cover everything in blood. Kevin Shirai Yosef.
How did he know about Tamar?
Yeah,
so everyone knows about Tamar,
right? We don't have to finish. We don't have to finish the
Medrash.
We don't have to finish the Medrash, but this Medrash, like, there are some Midrashim that are wild and crazy. The one I always pick is Noach, the Tev, and the Raven. Okay, that's just like crazy. You read that Medrash and you know that there's no way that Noach, Mr. Raven was concerned that Noach was out for Mrs. Raven. It's just the Medrash clearly means something else. And then there are some Midrashim. A good one this week is Yocheved born between the walls. I don't know. I don't have a problem with it. Does it have to be? Okay, it's a little convenient that somehow the Torah is off by one. Now, the simpler answer is that Yaakov is number 7. Okay, you don't want to count Yaakov. Okay, or not Yaakov, maybe there's a different answer, I don't remember. But okay, you want to throw Yocheved in, she's number 70, I don't know, it's fine. But then you have a medrash like this, where it's not that it's crazy and can't happen, but it couldn't have happened for a different reason. If Yosef would have said all of these things, what would Yehuda have done?
Realized it was Yosef.
Yeah, he would have been like, okay, fine, game over. Okay, maybe some of the things along the way, I didn't notice, I didn't read the writing on the wall so clearly. There's no way that this happened and I didn't realize it. You're right. Yosef, you're Yosef. So what's going on here? What is this medrash supposed to mean? So is it just a really nice side story? Maybe. But listen to what Nechama Leib would suggest. It is, I think it's unbelievable. She says that obviously Yosef is not being spoken to. This medrash is a conversation that never happened between Yosef and Yehuda. So, but did this conversation happen? She says absolutely. Where did this conversation happen? It happened in Yehuda's head. Yehuda is spending the entire story doing what? He's speaking to Yosef, but in his head, this is what's playing out. He's thinking, wow, I should have done what? I should have done better when it was Yosef in the pit, but I didn't. But now, all of a sudden, he gets an out. He says, but well, I don't have to worry about this. If I left now, I could feel totally comfortable and okay with it. Why? Because when I go up to my father, what can I say? Halach ad chevel, achar ad li. Wasn't my fault. We didn't do anything wrong. This is not we threw our brother in the pit, or I didn't stand up for my brother. I didn't do enough for Yosef. What is it? Binyamin stole. He could have easily walked away and said, I did nothing wrong. Yehuda grapples with his inner feelings of guilt throughout this entire story. And maybe perhaps you can suggest the same thing. Some of those things are actually reflected in his comments and his commentary in his speech to Yehuda, to Yosef itself, even in the Psukim. When he says in Pasuk Chav Zayin, Chav Chet, Veitzei Echad Mitiv, Omer Ach Tarov Torah, Lo Ritiv Adheina, the Medrash uses the same language also. And the same language is available also. Where? That's what Yaakov says at the end of Mechiras Yosef, at the end of Perek Lamed Zayin. Yehuda grapples with himself and with all of his troubles and inner turmoil throughout this entire story. But when he chooses not to say Halach Achevel Achar Adali, when he chooses to stand up to the very end, and that's what he's really saying in the Medrash. He's saying, I am willing to die, because it's a suicide mission to try to destroy three of the marketplaces in Egypt. I'm even willing to die if that's what it'll take to return Binyamin. At that point, his tshuva is complete. He has come completely around. Now, whether Yosef is trying to make tshuva or not, that's a separate topic for a different time. But at the end, what's most important to Yosef is, or what's most important to the story is to show how far Yehuda has come. Even though he could walk away, not feel guilty at all, say, I did my best. He's pretty good at the end of Miketz also when he says, I'm willing to switch places, take me, not him. The fact that Yehuda is basically saying, I will not leave without him, shows how far he's come. And that is a complete reversal of where he was in Mechiras Yosef. How far the brothers, and specifically Yehuda, have come since the beginning. And perhaps that's why the Medrash even brings in Tamar to this story. The Medrash shows that within Yehuda's inner turmoil is actually the path to how he went from Ma Betza Kinaroget Achinu, when they decide to sell Yehuda, to sell Yosef. Look how far they came from there to here, where he is willing to go to the very end to save Binyamin. Have a good Shabbos.